perfect segue into my opening words for this morning. Thank you for the warm birthday wishes. It's lovely to be middle-aged. I'm embracing it. This month, our theme is love and justice. And I've been pondering a lot the connection between love and justice. And we'll explore that this morning by looking at Child Haven, one of the organizations that we love and support every year. And I came across, many of you have probably heard this quote from Black intellectual, activist, provocateur, Professor Cornel West. He says, "Never forget that justice is what love looks like in public. Justice is what love looks like in public." And so this morning we celebrate that Bonnie and Fred Cappuccino back in 1965 decided to make some public love out there in the world, specifically in Tibet and Nepal and India. They were inspired to create some homes for people who needed homes, to make a way for new people in the world to. So I'm going to invite Diane to come forward. Diane McLaren, who has been a longtime advocate of Child Haven and who is healthy and well and with us this morning to light our chalice flame for all of the ways that love has lit the way to justice in our lives and in our world. And most especially, we light this flame this morning for the light that Bonnie and Fred helped to kindle many years ago. Blessed be.
So last week, I enjoyed visiting the Spirit Explorer group, and one of the things that they did was sing a really nice song with hand motions. And one of those was this shape, where you take a almost like a C and then another, and you put them together. And it was kind of a perfect shape for that song and for family weekend and Valentine's Day. And I think it's also a very good symbol for Bonnie. My family and I call her Bonnie Ma, which is what a lot of kids in India, Nepal, Tibet, and Bangladesh call her too. Because she's kind of a mom to everybody. She's just got so much love in her heart. And her husband Fred does too, because he's been joining with her, not only in the Child Haven project, but before that, when they first got married, they immediately went down to an adoption agency. They said, "We want to adopt a kid. Do you have any that are hard to place?" That means a child that other people don't seem to want to adopt. Well, they actually couldn't get the very first get one right away. The people at the adoption agency said, "You haven't been married long enough." But eventually, they were successful, in fact, very successful. They had two biological children, and they adopted 19. And their family, apparently, they lived on a farm eventually in Ontario, and some of the neighbors, when they had visitors, they'd tell their visitors, "Oh, you should go and just park on the road close to Bonnie and Fred's when the school bus is coming, because then they could see every color and shape and size of child get on the bus." They got a little frustrated with the adoption agencies, though. It just wasn't working well enough. So what did they do? They started their own adoption agency. It was called Families for Children, and they joined up with two other families that were, I don't want to use the word crazy, but together, those three families adopted 55 children. And they were also very busy helping other families adopt children. They had contacts in Vietnam, and Bonnie and Fred went to India and Bangladesh and looked for abandoned and orphaned children who needed a home. But eventually, maybe 21 was enough. I don't know. But it could also be that it was getting harder to organize adoption, and people were starting to think some different, have some other questions about adoption. And they decided, maybe we'll have more impact if we set up homes for those orphaned and abandoned children in their home country. And that's what brought them to India to create the first Child Haven home in Gujarat in India. And after that, they ended up with 6 in India, 1 in Nepal, 1 Tibet, 1 Bangladesh. And my family and I were lucky enough to get to go and visit. We visited 4 Child Haven homes when we spent 4 months in India. About 8 years ago now, it feels so long ago. So we had just such a lovely time. My kids were 11 years old, so that's about like a few of you, and 14 and 18. And we just really wanted to be able to connect with the kids, and we knew language would be a barrier, so we brought some yarn. And you might recognize some people made things like this, and that's one of the things we did with the kids at Child Haven. And this is another thing. You guys probably know this. It's kind of it was fun because we learned some new, I don't remember them now, but my kids learned some new, you know, games you can play with a cat's cradle. It's kind of an international toy and we could fit it in our backpack. So that was a fun thing. We were just about a week in each home, or less than a week in some of them. But we did what we could to help the kids with their math homework and their English homework. And sometimes my kids said, I think they speak better English than I do. The older kids. The younger kids didn't. But mostly they played. The Child Haven kids are used to volunteers coming. But most of those volunteers are adults. And most of the volunteers are adult women. So they were quite thrilled to have, I hear you're bringing male energy with you, have both my husband and Emil, who was 11, an 11-year-old boy to play with. And that's what they did. Tag and hide and go seek. And sometimes when they were helping prepare food together, it would be some kind of tapping tag game or something. They played and they played and they played. And we had a lovely time. Not just at Child Haven, but everything we did in India was very lovely. And we hadn't been home all that long. My kids said they were homesick for India. Homesick. And then a while later, Nadia said something that I thought was quite interesting. She was not quite 15. She said, Mom, if you ever meet anybody that's low in self-esteem, you should send them to India. And I thought at the time that she was thinking about all the attention we got. Because we got a lot of attention. There's not a lot of Western families who travel there. And people in India love to see families together. And so people were stopping us on the street to talk with us. They wanted to take our pictures. Strangers invited us into their homes. It was incredible, the experiences. But as I was just working on what I'd say today, I suddenly realized, no, you know, I think the reason Nadia felt like her self-esteem had grown wasn't just all that attention. It was also the time we spent at the Child Haven homes, because she was sharing part of her love. And that made it grow just the way I think the proper symbol for Bonnie and Fred is more like this, you know, big, big hearts. So let's today we'll go and share our big hearts with each other, and let's form the arch as adults. Thank you.
Good morning. I've been asked to tell you why I support Child Haven and why the congregation chose about 10 years ago, I think, to make it one of our special annual charities. I think that was Ted Humphrey's work when Ted was chair of the board. Back in 1970, I met the Reverend Fred Cappuccino, who was at that time minister of the Lakeshore Unitarian Church of Montreal. And he and Bonnie were running the adoption agency, as we've just heard from Faye, for handicapped children from overseas. I volunteered to do some of the official Ontario home studies. So I got to know Child Haven quite well, or the Families for Children agency then. Later on, the Cappuccinos felt, as Faye mentioned again, it'd be far better use of money to keep the children in their own country. So when respected leaders in India actually offered their own big houses and land, they started their first homes. This now has become 1,100 children. There's a misprint in your order of service. There's a zero missing. 8 homes in 4 countries. They also offer career training to 150 handicapped women, like women who are blind or have just one arm. Daily food for orphan seniors. If you want to know what an orphan senior is, ask me later. And they offer a host of supportive services in the neighborhood. In 1993, Mel and I were able to visit 2 Indian homes with Bonnie, and one was Kalyampundi, the biggest home in the south, which they had visited. This is the oldest and biggest home with 300 children and its own farm attached. We were both so inspired by what we saw that on retirement, we signed up as volunteer interns in the Kathmandu home in Nepal. That was such a wonderful experience that we stayed on an extra month, that is 4 months, more than the usual 3, and then went a second time in 2001, spending altogether 7 months in Nepal. Honey and Hugo will talk a little later about how the children tug at your heartstrings and how tough it is to leave after 3 months. For you spend most of your time with the children, offering love and attention, coaching, creative crafts, games, music, whatever skill you have to offer. But what else do volunteers do? Mel and I taught the staff English, quite a challenge when some of them were illiterate. Mel did the official financial report for the Kathmandu home and was convinced that money was extremely wisely used. Then Bonnie invited us to help open a home in the fairly remote Tibetan Valley. It was part of a village school and connected to a monastery. Altogether, a unique and inspiring trip to Tibet. We were sent out to do networking locally with several other non-government agencies in Kathmandu. These were local charities, and they all tend to work together extremely well. The most important one I'm going to talk about, because it's also a focus this month, the Unitarian Service Committee. We were so impressed. They do outstanding community development work throughout Nepal. They took us on 3 very different major projects, one of which you could only reach by stole aircraft going to a very remote Tibetan valley. We went there for 10 days. The conditions are so harsh that half the population in a village had died of starvation. This resulted in several orphan children coming to Child Haven. Do you like Indian food and dancing? We have a fundraising dinner on April the 1st, and our team is starting to sell tickets. Also on April the 7th and 8th, some younger Unitarian Child Haven supporters are running 2 spring dances called Queer as Punk. They were sold out last year, so if you're interested, I can give you a contact now before they get sold out again. Thank you for your support for Child Haven over the years.
I invite you now to center yourself. We'll move things around a little bit. We'll do our prayer and meditation now and then have Hani and Hugo come forward and share their experience. Take some deep breaths. Think of all the remembrances and hopes that were just expressed in silence in this space. I'll share with you now a prayer written by Fred Cappuccino, and then invite you into a time of silence with the chime. Glowing, glowing deep within each one of you is a divine spark. Though some of you may be skeptical or feel that you are unworthy, the divine spark glows there inside you. Sometimes it is overlaid with self-interest sometimes it is encrusted with fear. Yet the divine spark illumines your soul. We may tend to deny it, knowing that we have done those things which we ought not to have done. Yet the divine spark never leaves you. This divine spark may surprise you as the future unfolds. It may lead you to risk much in some wild act of compassion. You are of infinite worth. You possess a dazzling beauty that is irresistible. Trust this divine spark glowing, glowing in your deepest being. For that spark in us all, and for the wild acts of compassion that spark may lead us to, we give our thanks this morning. Blessed be.
Good morning. I'm one of the volunteers that went to Nepal, Child Haven, Nepal, and I was asked for some reflections on that trip. And I asked, well, do I have an hour? And she said,
no.
5 minutes. Okay. Well, that's quite a task, because there's a lot of things I could tell you about living with 90 children and 12 caregivers in very cramped quarters in the city of Bhaktapur, which was the time when they were still living in a relatively small town. They've moved to Kathmandu since. So just to give you a bit of background as to how we got to go to Nepal, Honey and I were married 17 years ago, and that year was the time when Mel and Christine had gone to Nepal, and they came back with very and interesting stories. So we said, well, that's something we can do. You know, we'll make it a working honeymoon. You know, we can just do something practical while we're out in the country. And you know, as Nepal is a very beautiful country, so it has a great attraction for us to go there. So anyway, the first 3 months we spent at Child Haven. And I can tell you all kinds of interesting stories of how to interact with the kids. It's totally an out of this world experience to be with those enthusiastic, loving kids, and they range in age from 3 to 17. You know, and we thought we combined our families when Honey and I got married. We have now 9 children between the two of us. Me contributing the majority, but that we won't go into details. But there is also 17 grandchildren as a result. So we thought we were reasonably well equipped to deal with that many kids. And, what qualifications do you need? You just need enthusiasm and lots of patience. So I want to stay away from all giving all these stories. I've done it in the past, and they're okay. They're good laughs, but really what I want to concentrate on is the essence of Child Haven and what it means to me. And I think I boiled it down to about 3 or 4 points. So the first thing you have to know that Child Haven is very much uses the philosophy of Gandhi. And that right away puts it apart from a lot of other good causes. So the girls and the boys are treated equally. The men and the women are treated equally. We live on a very balanced vegetarian diet. And certainly the religious freedom is very, very, very important to this philosophy. And it interestingly blends really well with our Unitarian values. So and the other thing that sets it apart, I think, is that it's an organization that is locally run. We come as volunteers there not to say, well, this is how we do it in Canada, or this is a better way of doing it. It's the total opposite. We learn from them, and then we say, okay, well, that's how it can be done. We'll support you. And that we followed their games that they played. We would, for a little example, when we have a card game, we deal, a round like this. You start with left. They always deal the other way around. And so that was one of these little things that they brought to our attention, said, no, that's not how you do it. they call me Hugo Dai and Honey Didi, the meaning big brother. So, something universal I could really do well, that's organize a soccer club. And we kick the ball around a bit. And on a very marginal kind of piece of land, I can tell you that. So the other thing I just want to bring to your attention is that Child Haven has a very low overhead administrative component. It's done a lot by volunteers. The place they work from in Ontario is very small. Fundraising is almost sort of like, they know they need money, but in a very strange way, because low pressure, they seem to get more money than you will ever believe. There'll be all kinds of organizations that suddenly come up with $100,000. Well, that floors me. And certainly the support is from people that bring in $25, $30 in fundraising are important. But the big items are usually coming in very interestingly. So I just want to wrap this up and say, the reason why I'm such a strong supporter is that we had fun with the kids. We know what you're doing. Yeah, you go there with a focus. You come back and you have learned a lot. And that's one of the reasons why I strongly support Child Haven.
I am going to tell you a little bit of stories. One of the things we were asked to do as volunteers was to have a small group of home work children, four children, eventually we had five. And every day we had to meet with these children after school and make sure they did their homework. And we did that, of course. But they were really very, very dutiful. They did their homework without much reminding. So we were finished quite early, and then Hugo and I would introduce games like 32, where they had to add numbers, educational games, and they loved these games. And what they did, they told all the children, oh, we only play games. So one day the director came and he said, honey and Hugo, I think I have a talk with you. I'm wondering whether you take this homework serious. So, yeah, why? So, well, we are told that you only play games. So, these kids, that's what they loved best, so that's what they talked about. So that's how they are. They're very, very enthusiastic and grabbing whatever they can enjoy. The warning there we got was, that I got, we were told that we should not be getting too attached to one child. And one child should not get too attached with us, because after 3 months, we would leave again. Well, when you meet every day with the same children, there's one little girl, Arpana, and I must say I had special feelings for her. But I tried not to show it too much. But she also had special feelings for me. And she became quite affectionate with me. She would, at homework time, she would snuggle up and would like to touch my hair, which is very different than any Pali hair, black and straight. And sometimes we'd meet in our room and she would get my sponge bag and sniff all the little lotions and potions. All these kind of personal things she really catered to. And I must admit, I didn't take it as serious enough, that disattachment she had for me. Because when we came to leave, we had a big ceremony. All the kids came on the balconies and in the square, and we had special rituals to say goodbye. And then some children came over to me and said, "Honey Didi, big sister, Arpana is hiding and she's crying." So kids know everything of everybody and where to find things. So they brought me to the little corner where Arpana was crying. So I gave her a little hug. But I realized, a little bit too late in that case, how 3 months is a long time. I mean, you meet these children every time, every day, and they always live with 100 children. So 4 with 1 with 2 adults was a pretty special personal time. So anyhow, there was love there, so that was the good part. The other thing we did was have to help them with speaking English. So when you go to Nepal and you find children with a Dutch accent, that's my fault. But one word stuck, and I know it stuck. There was one kid, he was really smart. He was very fast. He was very interested in learning anything, particularly English. And I must have used the word excellent a few times. Because one time he came to me and he said, "How was that, honey Didi?" I said, "Oh, pretty good." He said, "Not excellent." So he knows that word. So it was a lot of, we were younger then. I think you need energy to be there and lots of love. And that's mostly why you're there, to kind of make these children feel special. And as Hugo said, in the meantime, you learn a lot yourself. Thank you.
And now let's talk to somebody who hasn't gone to Child Haven yet, but who is going to be going there soon. Mariko, if you'd like to come up here and tell us a few words.
Hi, it's kind of hard act to follow. It's a wonderful song by choir. Thank you, Hugo and Christy and Mel. I guess you are one of my inspirations that led me to the Sandivo or going to Nepal. My name is Mariko Matsumoto. I have now been a member of this congregation for almost 14 years. The time goes real fast. Yes, I'm leaving on March 2nd to go to the Child Haven International in Nepal as an intern. I cannot believe that I'm finally going. Working at the Child Haven International has been on my bucket list for several years. And I'm very excited to actually be going. I went to the intern orientation in Maxville, Ontario in January. It was nice to meet with other hopeful interns as well as Bonnie and Fred Cappuccino, Bonnie Ma and Fred Pa, and Robin Cappuccino, their son, and Steve Bain, who runs the Child Haven office in Maxville. There are 3 other interns, hopeful interns, who served in the past there as well. They shared their experience with us during the orientation. It was truly enriching weekend. Not only the information given, the session presented the flavor of this wonderful endeavor. I'm hoping that I can contribute something toward this wonderful organization as well as to learn something from the experience. Some people say it is a life-changing experience. Ha, 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 ha. You may see a changed woman in June. But I'm sure that it will be a great spiritual experience for me. Child Haven established under Gandhi's philosophy of nonviolence. This world needs much of that. There are too many conflicts, wars, and violence around the world. I'm very proud to be working with an organization that is based on this philosophy. This world needs much love. And if I can give love to children who need it, I feel that I will be completing a part of my life's work. My younger son, Paul, who's not his younger brother to the son who is present here, who is 32 years old now, is also coming with me. It will be a wonderful for us to share the experience together at such a wonderful project. He's very excited about this as well. I have been in contact with two interns who are there in Nepal right now, and they suggested some items they can use for children's education. I purchased some items such as workbooks, coloring markers, beads, and etc. to take with me. I would appreciate if you can help with the cost of these items. I hear children, they are very appreciative of anything provided for them. While I miss all of you for 3 months, I will look forward to sharing my experience with you when I get back in June, for sure. Thank you for your attention.
So we keep changing things up in your order of service. At this point, you probably should just put them away. We're not going to sing Dark of Winter. We're running a little low on time. So I'm going to go ahead and do my piece, and then we will sing Our World is One World, because it's a perfect fit for our topic this morning. So you might be thinking, what does Shauna have to add to this? She's never been to Child Haven. She hasn't gone. What's the point of her talking? Which is part of why I had a lot of other people who really actually had on-the-ground experience with Child Haven share some with you. I think my role is to do a little bit more of the expansive, overarching piece as I began the day with you by pointing out Cornel West's quote, that quotation, which I will share with you again. Never forget that justice is what love looks like in public. When I read that quotation again recently, even though many people had shared it with me over the years, I realized that it points me toward a simple, perhaps I'll even acknowledge oversimplified, equation that has become clearer and clearer to me of late. And that equation is that love or care or empathy, whatever word you want to use, taken and then extended or expanded beyond its usual bounds, equals justice. Those of you who read one of my recent writings, I write sometimes for the Times Colonist and other things, and I was talking about in one of my recent blog posts about my former career as a preschool teacher. It became really quickly clear to me in that role that I loved these children. They were not my children. I was not biologically connected to them, and I certainly didn't own them. They were quite clear about that every minute of every day. But I loved them. I felt deeply, deeply, deeply tied to them. Their days were my days, and I wanted what was best for them in life. One of my favorite bloggers, Courtney Martin, recently wrote about how if we were able to expand that kind of care that we have, that kind of shepherding that we do with our own children, wanting what's best for them, if we were able to do that for all children, especially children who are feeling on the edges and marginalized in our culture, who aren't getting the best education, who aren't getting the best health care, who aren't getting the best of everything, what a different world we would have, she said. And then I read the words of Mother Teresa reminding us that the problem that we have is that we don't define family large enough. We take family to mean only those people who are blood related to us and who are most closely tied to us in that way. But what if our sense of family, our sense of caring knew much broader, much more expansive bounds? What if, as one of our forefathers in Unitarianism, William Ellery Channing, wrote, I am a living member of the great family of all souls. And I cannot improve or suffer myself without diffusing good or evil around me through an ever-enlarging sphere. I have those words on the wall in my office. Channing stares at me all the time, asking me if I am diffusing good or evil around me in ever-enlarging spheres. If we are indeed living members of the great family of all souls, then our family is not contracting. Trump. Our family is not getting smaller. It's not our job to see how small we can make our hearts, how few people we can care about, how much we can make differences between us barriers, walls, figurative and literal, but rather to say, how can I diffuse good around me in ever-enlarging spheres? How can I love other people's children? When we care about our human family and community, good and just things happen. When we invite refugees into our community, good and just things happen. When we tutor children in after-school programs, good and just things happen. When we start programs for kids and teens who are at risk in so many ways, good and just things happen. If justice is what love looks like in public, I love that because it means that what I really need to do is do more loving publicly. I need to not keep it to myself or just those people closest to me. I need to figure out ways to share and spread my sense of love, and that in doing that, it's hard to not want justice for people you love, right? It's hard to not want not just good for them, but for them to be treated equally and fairly, and to advocate on the behalf of all people. So friends, in a world that increasingly encourages us to hunker down in camps, to set ourselves up in isolated bubbles of existence, I want to call us this day to reach out. I was thinking of how the choir sings to us regularly about the importance of drawing the circle wide. When you sing that song, you say not only to draw the circle wide, but you say draw it wider still. Which reminds me, I'm like, yeah, my circle's pretty wide. No. The song then says, but wider, you can do more. It's like when you think you can only fit so many people into your embrace, go wider still. Let us follow Bonnie and Fred's example and support their work in Child Haven and support the work that we can here, support all work that is at the intersection, at the corner of love and justice. So may it be. And amen. Friends, we said that our world is one world. Bob Marley might even say, we have but one love. Our life, I would say, is one life. We might like to think of ourselves as separate in so many ways. We live in different countries. We move in different ways through the world. And yet, here we are, all on this one planet, with but one lifetime. So why not love more rather than less? Why not hope bigger? Why not extend ourselves? Why not love other people's children as much as we love our own? Friends, our world is one world, and you are its beating heart. Reach out into this world. Don't shrink. Expand. May it always be so, and blessed be.